Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Hopefully this will work. Skype is doing weird stuff with updates lately.
Interesting.
Least it did with Knutson, but he's on Vista, so. Chris?
Chris, are you there?
Yes.
Oh, hello,
Yes.
Chris.
Well, we're all here. How about
Can
that?
you
How
hear
go?
me okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do I sound okay?
Yeah. Why,
Do I
what's
sound
wrong?
this?
Why are you not
I got
feeling
a
well?
different. I know I have a different headset.
Oh. You sound fine.
Just
Yeah.
testing it out.
You sound
Does
a
it
little
sound the same?
scared.
I thought he sounded
Well,
a little gassy.
I'm always a
Yeah, a
little
little.
trepidatious about.
You're
I never know what
intimidated
to
early
expect.
on, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm intimidated by your sunglasses and
He
head
does
cover.
look cool, doesn't
Yeah.
Yes, like a.
It looked like I want to kick your ass, huh? That's what you
That's
want.
why I'm making the face that I'm making.
That's why I ran away and gave
Put the
the
cat in
headphones to my
front.
cat.
Yeah,
You deal with that guy.
exactly.
liked my crossed one, but I don't know what I did with it. I switched pictures one day and I forgot what happened to my crossed one.
Very interesting.
Yeah. So, we're back. And
We're
another
finally back.
episode of Geek Brunch Retrocast.
Indeed. It's
So what
about
have you
time.
guys been up to?
Oh, I've been buying comic books. More
Yeah?
comic books than I should buy.
Old or new?
Well, both. Really, I've been, it seems like every month I'll just go on my comic shop and pick up a few or Atomic Avenue or whatever. Just nothing like crazy, but just stuff filling in the gaps.
Well, what did you fill in? I want to know.
I've been trying to fill in that period of time that I stopped buying Superman Action and Adventures.
Adventure
So,
Comics or
no,
what?
Adventures of Superman.
Oh, Adventures
Like,
of
yeah, when
Superman.
they were the triangles and stuff. Yeah, because I stopped buying all of them at some point, and then I started buying them like right as Doomsday was starting. So I had about
Yeah.
a, God, probably a 30-issue gap in between for all of them, except for, of course, Action, which was a lot more because it was weekly.
Yeah.
So, but I actually I've gotten everything that I needed pretty much for Action and, or not Action, but Superman and Adventures of Superman, and I'm starting to close the gaps on even the Action Comics. I could get them a lot faster. Well, I mean, you know this too, but I don't want to spend even like $4 for each
Yeah.
weekly. I mean, these are the types of books that if they're around, I can find them in like 50-cent bins and stuff like
Sure.
that a lot. So I've been picking and choosing which ones I happen to be able to find at a cheap price. But
Why
yeah.
did you stop? Did you go
I
cold
don't.
turkey or did you
Yeah.
just stop Superman?
Oh, it was just a, I don't even remember. This was, God, I don't know when that was. It had to be
In the 80s
high,
or no, it's
yeah, high
night
school or
right before death
college.
in the 90s then, early 90s.
Yeah, but when I stopped, so that was probably 3 years before.
Yeah.
I don't know when that would have been, but I just wasn't enjoying it as much, so I was pulling back on what I was buying. I mean, at that, back then I was probably buying 20 to 30 monthly titles. That
Yeah.
was legit. And things would go. If I found other stuff that I liked, I would start dropping some other comics to make up for it.
Yeah.
And that was one that I wasn't really enjoying as much. And now looking back, I do enjoy all that stuff, but at the time you had to make changes, or make
Yeah.
adjustments.
Well, maybe
So I
you
did
like
pick
it
up.
more now than you did then.
Yeah, I think that I do.
Maybe 20 years from now I could say that about Tom King's Batman.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe
Maybe.
not.
Maybe.
I love it, but I don't blame it. It doesn't.
Maybe if I read alphabetical order, it'll help.
You probably would like it better. But you know what's funny? You've even
No, gone I probably read Aquaman first and say that's good, and then I'd read that, and then I'd get more depressed.
Well, didn't you even give it like second and third chances, like reading like the
entire
Aquaman
stuff?
And it's not bad.
It's just the dialogue takes me out of the story.
Because if you're not liking it, reading it back to back, then you just plain don't like it.
Yeah, but maybe when I'm on some kind of pill in the future, it'll work better.
Maybe when it's all over with.
Yeah, when I'm hooked up to the morphine machine.
I don't know.
But, well, I want to thank you guys for the wonderful birthday gift. That was awesome.
Oh, yes, you're welcome.
Yeah, you're welcome.
That was really good. I really liked the condition of it, too. It was really, really good shape, Rob.
I really like that dealer.
Yeah, when you told me, I went and looked to see if they had any crack comics. I could get the Ray, but they didn't.
Well, yeah,
they had crack comics, but they didn't have any with the Ray.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's usually the problem I enter in at the conventions. Like, I could find Police comics and National comics, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
But when I try to look for Smash or Crack, they're harder to. that didn't sound right, but they're harder to find.
Well, the one that we got, what was I forgot now? The
Smash
one with Condor
Comics 28.
What was it?
Smash Comics. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know that Crack Comics that you're talking about, I never had even heard of that as a comic book title.
Yeah.
Never even until you mentioned it on that on your week the Mike Gums Weekly Reads.
Well, that surprised the hell out of me because I was expecting the package that came with the Cyber Rads.
I know. That's why I thought.
So I knew those were coming.
Yep.
Because we had talked about it, and I said, "Yeah, I'm trying to fill in that continuity stuff," and you sent me the Cyber Rads, which was pretty much almost all of Volume 1. Except for like one issue. And then I like opened it and I said, there's a card here. And then I looked at it and I'm like, wow.
You know what? Yeah, I'm like, oh, I wonder if he's gonna like go online to track it or anything like that. He probably didn't, right?
I didn't, no.
No, because like, you know,
if it was that I would have, but
well, I put it with insurance.
I was like,
so if you would have gone on and like somehow noticed that it had insurance on it, you'd be like, Why did you put insurance on these?
What is Rob doing?
These are like 50-cent bucks.
Those Neil Adams comics are worth a lot these days.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, no, we were all happy to be able to do that.
Yeah, that was really cool. And then I got a shipment, too. I finished my All-Star Squadron. I finished a couple of other things.
Chris finished All-Star Squadron first.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
I was second.
Then basically I just sat around waiting for you guys to catch up with me.
Yeah, you're like, oh,
maybe I was first. I just had flip covers or something going on, and I filed it under the other one.
No, there are no flip covers. All-Star Squadron.
Shit.
There are some. There is an issue with a 16-page preview in it.
Yeah, that's in Justice League.
I'm getting mixed up. Yeah.
It's interesting you brought that up because one of the books that I bought, I think the covering today had a letters page covering the preview.
Yeah, I noticed that when I was watching my spy cam of you. you can edit that part out.
Yeah. So, Chris, how have you been?
Pretty good. No. When was the last time we recorded? A couple weeks ago?
Yeah.
About a month ago, probably. Right?
Was it a month ago?
It had to have been, because didn't record 2 weeks ago.
I think I did 2 geek brunches back to back.
Yeah. I've been good.
I got some information on a couple of creators that are coming to the Buffalo Comic Con in September. Ugh. Kevin Nolan is coming.
Oh.
Yep.
He's and doing Bane right now.
Yep. And then Tony Isabella is coming.
Oh, Black Lightning.
That's cool.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he's taking, I think my comic shop owner is taking advantage of the fact that that's, you know, going to be right before the, I think TV that show comes out, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
That'll be cool.
Yeah, I have a full run of Black Lightning. I like him. I think I have every appearance of his.
Really?
I have all of the Justice Leagues. I have Batman and the Outsiders. I have all the volumes of Black Lightning. I have DC Comics Presents. You know, like all the other titles that he would appear in.
Do you have Black Lightning Year One?
Yeah.
Very good. I have one issue of the first volume.
Hope it's number one.
No, it's number 8.
Ah.
And I have 3 issues in the second volume that was in the 90s.
Well, you know what's worthwhile, too, is getting the trade for that, because the trade has Canceled Comics Cavalcade. It has the last unprinted issue of that. I like when they do
that. Oh, really?
They did that with Fury of Firestorm, too, or the first Firestorm volume that was only 5 issues. It has another issue in there that was never printed. And the Steve Ditko Creeper one has that, too, where it has an issue that was never printed. Unless you happen to have those canceled comic cavalcades, which are extremely rare.
Right. Oh, that's cool. Now, our database is trying to tell me that the first appearance of Black Lightning would be worth $29, which I highly, highly doubt.
That's going up.
If I can find it for $29, I'm buying it today.
Yeah, well, our prices in this database are very conservative.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, here I'm looking at it now.
And it doesn't trend like the craziness. Like, it doesn't trend like, it's like more like Overstreet. It doesn't trend like what's hot now. Like,
no.
Wizard Magazine used to do that.
I think you were telling me that kind of based on what people are actually selling them for as well in the past on Atomic Avenue. Is that right?
Yeah.
So that could be skewed, too, based on the last time somebody really sold, like, a copy in a near-mint condition or something.
Sure.
Yeah, this is where, like, my comic shop has it of 7.0 for $70.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Thinking about 5 years ago, it was a $5 to $10 book.
Well, that's crazy. He's a great character that's been around for a long time now.
He's amazing because years. He had that fake fro he'd put on, you know, to hide his identity.
That was part of his costume.
A scientist that betrayed him gave him a belt that generated the electricity, and like in one issue it just became organic. They never explained it.
Yeah.
Like before it was technologically based. And then he had, like, this trauma thing happen to him, and he realized that the belt, like, transferred the ability to his organic body. So, it's kind of strange.
I totally forgot about that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, and he was always fighting the 100, which is another gang group that came up in, like, Firestorm a lot. Sometimes, I think, in Captain Atom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I found one.
Good stuff.
That is being bid on, but there's 2 more days left, and it's $27.
Yeah.
I would like to.
That might be better to wait.
You think
and
so?
Then he also had his appearances in Adventure Comics too. I think as one, you know, when it was the dollar.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I had any of those.
Right now, with the TV show coming, there's probably speculation.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's I didn't think of that.
That's what it's a horrible time to buy.
Yeah. I'm gonna watch this auction though. It ends in 2 days, just to see if it goes up much or not. We'll see.
It'll kind of depend on how well the show does, probably.
Yeah, that could just fall off the face of the earth. If the show
people
just
forget
appears.
People, speculators have like this short attention span thing though. Like, the book is usually hot. Like, you want to sell it like right before the show comes out.
Yep.
Or before when the news is just saying it, like it flashes of having this villain in it or something like that. Then the book is somewhat hot, and then it happens, and then the book decreases, you know, 6 months later.
So well, I saw that with Falcon.
More like get it now, yeah.
You know, because I kind of always wanted one, and just waited too long, and then that movie was about to come out. And I'm like, well, I'm not buying it now. And then I bought it last year, and it was back down to like, you know, I mean it. I don't think it went all the way back down, but it was more reasonable prices.
Yeah, I was lucky I got it before he was even in the Cap movies.
So. Yeah.
Same with Black Panther.
Yeah, I got a Black Panther as well. Mine are not great condition, but I'm glad that I got a 52 and a 53 years ago. So your birthday was no good, huh?
No, it was. You guys gave me that grift. It actually happened. My birthday was just a stressful day.
You had trouble at work? Bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard. There's nobody left, so anytime there's a fire, I have to like multi-thread, and it gives me anxiety because they don't let me finish one problem. They throw more at me.
Right.
So it's like I haven't even finished this one, and you've given me 7 more, and they're all top priority, so I get extreme amount of anxiety. I'm getting too old for it.
Well, that's tough when they keep cutting people back, but they still need the same amount of work done.
Yeah.
That sucks.
But I'm going on a vacation soon, so.
Are you going away?
Yeah.
Where are you going?
South Carolina.
Oh.
So, it'll be a good break.
Are you doing? What are you doing there? Anything in particular?
Just family is going to be there. We're all meeting.
Well, that'll
there.
Be nice.
Yeah.
Cool. Where's Martin? In North Carolina?
Yeah. He's not in Charlotte. Well, I don't know where he is. I know he's close to Charlotte, but I think he's a couple of like 3 hours away.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's in the backwoods where they have the murder sheds.
Yeah, that's what I understand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They have like neighbors where you never see the wife.
Well, what happened to the wife, Mike?
Yeah, what happened to the wife?
Oh, that's scary.
Yeah.
I liked Nick's stories from a while back with the police keep knocking on his door.
they have some weird neighbors though. He just put out like bags of clothing and stuff for them to pick up, and
yeah. His neighbors reported him. Mrs. Wetmore.
Mrs. Wetmore in one of those garbage bags.
Or in all of the garbage bags. They're knocking on his door.
Yeah.
And then when she screamed.
They're knocking on the door. Maybe see some kind of ID. Because they're like, is this your girlfriend here instead of your wife? You're lying.
My God. Chris, did you listen to that at all? It was very funny.
Which one is it?
I don't know. It was like 3 episodes ago or something like that.
A Nerdy Legion where Nick was recounting the times that the police came to his door because he's got nosy neighbors. And apparently they thought he was murdering his wife.
Yeah, Nick plays a lot of grab ass. So he was playing grab ass up and down the stairs, and they were screaming and stuff.
And screaming, stop it, stop,
stop
it.
And the neighbors called the police, reported it.
Yep.
I'm usually behind on that show because they record every week.
Yeah, twice a week. Yeah.
Or sometimes, yeah. So every time I turn around, there's another episode. So I usually have a backlog.
Yeah. I try to listen in the shower and
in the shower.
Oh yeah. Very
he's
intimate.
Listening to the crock pot recipes as he's in the shower lathering up.
That's right. And then driving back and forth to work. I can get through them. I mean, I'm always behind, but I'm like a week behind right now.
Do they tell you ahead of time which ones are the sexy ones so you know which ones to save for the shower?
Shower?
Well, I have to reach out and ask. They don't volunteer it unless I ask.
At least they tell you.
Exactly.
Yeah, I said I'm saving this one for the shower.
Exactly. Hey, you know, whatever gets you through the day.
Yeah, that's crazy, especially with the... I could see a neighbor calling because they hear commotion. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, something might be going on. But it's just them playing grab ass. The bags, like leaving the bags out there, they're already suspicious if they're reporting, hey, they have extra garbage bags. I think there's a body in there or something.
Well, right. I mean, wasn't she was out of town or something? Wasn't
yeah.
That part of it?
Yeah.
And because they hadn't seen her and he's putting out garbage bags, that's the first thing they think of. Like, what is wrong with these neighbors?
That was really bizarre.
It's like one of those thriller suspense movies.
Yeah, it's just like that. Like you referenced, have you seen Rear Window? That I really enjoy that. But yeah, it reminds me of just of that.
Or Fright Night. Fright Night, they would have those bags. They'd carry them out in the morning. And they'd be looking, and they'd say, okay, there's another body. And he even had the police go over there, and they checked the bags.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that movie.
Yeah, I like that movie, too.
Brewster, you're so cool! Evil Ed.
I guess the Shudder subscription service has a documentary about the movie now, so I'm gonna
check
it out. Yeah,
I even like the second one, even though it's weird.
Don't remember.
It's the Sister's Revenge.
Yeah, I don't know if I've seen it then.
So they kill Dandridge in the first one,
right?
And then Dandridge's sister comes back for revenge. That's where they have crazy roller skating vampire.
Of course you do. It's the 80s.
Yeah. But the thing that's cool is it kept the cast intact. You know, Peter
Vincent. I think
Vincent,
I may have seen it, but
it kept Peter Vincent and Charlie intact. Mm-hmm. Like, so they're what make the movie.
Right, of course.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So have you had either one of you picked up any comic books lately?
I finished Force Works.
Did you?
Yeah. I've never read it before either. So.
That was on your radar, huh?
Yeah. I finished Punisher Volume 3, which is the Ostrander run.
Okay. Yep.
And I got further in Punisher Volume 1. And then I went on Amazing Spider-Man, and that's kind of the rabbit hole that I'm going down now.
Mm-hmm.
So... I'll probably be in the web of Spider-Man, Spectacular, and Amazing for a while. Until another squirrel says, woo!
Yeah. What about you, Chris? Anything?
No, not really. Reading? I don't think I have recently.
No?
No, not in the last few weeks. I don't think I've picked up anything. But, I mean... After I completed All-Star Squadron before you guys, I've just kind of been resting on my laurels.
We had to play catch-up.
Yeah.
A long time coming.
Well, I beat you to Force Works.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
How about that?
Well, you beat me to a lot of things, if we're going to be true. But I think I'll let you keep that Force Works. I don't think I'm going to try to catch up on that one.
No.
Nothing against Force Works.
I was reading of Avengers Unplugged, and they had an ad for it, and I was like, you know what? I know nothing about this team, except for like they had like an ad for like Century One Shot or something like that, and I'm like, who's this guy? And then I just decided to get it off of that.
Sure.
What the hell? They were cheap anyway.
Yeah.
But in my next one, which I'm not placing, but I'm kind of collecting, that's what I do with my comic shop, is like I'll find a little hole, mm-hmm. and I'll start adding them to my cart, and it saves it. So like when I'm ready to do it, then it's there.
But do you ever find that somebody else bought it, though, in the meantime?
That's happened, but there's so much other stuff on the list that doesn't hurt my feelings, you know?
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. like I put Daredevil number 9 on there. I haven't seen where they keep their minus ones, though. Like, I haven't been able to find them on my comic
Oh, really?
Shop.
Oh.
Yeah, I need Daredevil minus 1, believe it or not. And I couldn't find it, so I was like, huh. I was going to add that one, too. But I'm going to work on my finishing it, because, like I said, I'm so close, you know?
Yeah.
And I did the hard part. Oh, and yes, I finished Ghost Rider Volume 2.
The Danny Ketch one?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I have a full run of that. I've been reading that, and a lot of the later issues, like around after, I don't know, 30, I have never read before. So it's like it's new stuff to me.
Yeah. That's pretty much where I dropped off around that time frame as well.
Yeah. Well, good. You want to kick this one off?
Sure. Yeah.
Who wants to go first?
I can.
Okay.
All right. So one of the things that I'm doing is I'm reading the old Spider-Man comics from Masterworks.
Oh, nice.
Because I'm like, I gotta get in here and read some of these.
Do you have the hardcover or the soft covers?
I have the hard covers for the first 3 volumes.
Okay.
And then after that, Nick turned me on to, they kept having Comixology sales.
Yeah.
They were like, literally like, I bought a few when they were $5 per book.
Wow.
And then,
so it's
and
like
then they were
$79 versus $5 or $75.
But then they had them for $3.
Wow.
And I'm like, you know, and I needed like maybe 7 more. So I'm mm-hmm. like, I just got them all. Every one that, you know, I still hadn't had. So all of the rest of them 4 through, I think it's up to like 17 or something like that. I have all those just digitally, but I mean, that's fine. You know, I don't collect individual issues, digitally, but if I can find a real good deal like that, I mean, it's not something that I'm ever going to go out of my way to buy for like 50 or, like you said, $70 each. So, so yeah. Anyhow, they've been piling up, and I'm like, well, when am I going to get to them? So I decided to kind of put them in a rotation where I'm reading a couple, and then I'll move on to something else, and I'll go back and read a couple of the Masterworks again. Mm-hmm. But what I realized is that, you know, for whatever reason, the annuals aren't in the Masterworks. So, like, I got and I read, like, Spider-Man 16, and it was referencing, like, okay, next issue, and then also there's going to be an annual coming out. And as I kept reading, I read, you know, up to, like, 18, it was already referencing stuff that had happened in the annual. So I'm like, I wonder why they don't put I understand it would be a thicker volume because they're just trying to do 10 regular issues per Masterworks, but I'm kind of surprised that they don't have the annuals in there. So I went ahead and just downloaded one, downloaded annual one on Comixology, and I read it that way.
That's weird.
Yeah, right?
I would have thought I would have it.
Yeah, I don't know why it doesn't.
I bet you the Essential does.
Yeah, I'm sure it does. I don't have the essentials for Spider-Man, but I bet you anything you're right, just based on all the volumes of X-Men that I had, they included all those. So
yeah, I like when they I like when a book or an epic or whatever kind of starts with whatever. It doesn't care what the title is, but it's more concerned with the sequential order.
Yeah.
Or it's like reading the full order history. And having the history of the story arc.
Yep. Yep.
Then what title it came from. So like some of the collected editions, they'll even have like, they won't have full issues of something, but they'll say, hey, you know what? This had a scene with May Parker in it that was 2 issues ago, but we're including it because it has to do with the storyline, you know?
Exactly.
And it's just like 8 pages, but it's an important 8 pages to the storyline.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. I like it when they do that now. But, you know, they didn't do it back then, so I'm like, well, I got to read this. And, you know, it was $1.99, so I picked it up. And, you know, it's the first appearance of the Sinister Six, which, so it's, you know, all original story. It's not like it was reprints or anything. So that was a lot of fun. So basically with this story, what you're getting is Doc Ock ends up getting out of prison. He escapes, and he decides what he's going to do to finally defeat Spider-Man is he's going to gather a bunch of Spider-Man's enemies together, and they're going to attack him one by one until he's so weakened that he's just going to end up losing eventually. So he gathers up who does he get? He gets Sandman, Kraven, Mysterio, Vulture, and Electro. So this is around between, I think, issues 16 and 17, or between 17 and 18. So it's right around there. So Kraven was very new at that point because his first appearance had been number 15. But anyhow, what they end up doing is they force J. Jonah Jameson to put an ad in the newspaper saying that he's got to appear at a certain time, certain place. But he didn't even need that because as he's swinging around, he happens to see Betty Brant out on the street with Aunt May and sees Dr. Octopus, or actually it was Electro and Sandman, gather the two women up and put them in a car and drive away. So he already knows that something has happened and he can't figure it out. But then eventually he does figure it's got to have something to do with Doc Ock because Betty Brant has some history with Dr. Octopus where her brother had been his lawyer and kind of blackmailed his brother into having him escape a previous time. His brother ended up dying. So what ends up happening is they're trying to get a hold of Spider-Man, not knowing that Spider-Man already knows what's going on here. And it has cameos in this annual of almost every single superhero that existed at that point in the Marvel Universe. You've got the Avengers, you've got and I'm talking like literally like it might only be like a one or two panel cameo, but it's got the Avengers, it's got the X-Men, it's got like Thor's flying by at one point. The Fantastic Four, of course, have a quick cameo. So each time it has a cameo, it has a little thing down below saying like the X-Men appear bi-monthly in their own feature length magazine. So it's trying to drum up sales for all their other books as well. But he goes ahead, he encounters Electro first. And Chris, I know that you saw some of those splash pages that I put up on Twitter.
Yeah.
And they're just, I mean, they're beautiful splash pages. A splash page for every villain as he's attacking each villain in turn. So I noticed that. When they did it for Electro, I'm like, oh, I bet you there's one for each villain. And sure enough, there was. And Ditko just did an amazing job. And of course, I didn't say the creative team, but of course, it's Stan Lee and Steve Ditko. So each time he defeats one, he gets a little card that they're holding that tells him where to go next. So he can finally find Betty and Aunt May. So he goes to Kraven next and defeats him. And he keeps going to each one in turn. He gets some assistance by the Human Torch, who's appearing a whole lot in these early issues. They're kind of like have a love-hate relationship, which I kind of like how they establish that very, very early in the run of the comic. And the other thing that's pretty funny is that Aunt May doesn't quite understand what's happening. Like, Betty's really nervous and scared that they've been captured by Doc Ock. But Doc Ock is being very, very polite and so forth. And Aunt May is, like smitten with Doc Ock. She's like, oh, he's such a charming gentleman. And she doesn't seem to have any idea that they're actually been kidnapped. Well, it's kind of funny. There's a panel where he's serving them tea and pastries. And it's just hilarious. So then Spider-Man thinks that he's encountered the X-Men, starts fighting them, but when he knocks one over, it breaks apart into like robot parts and ends up it's Mysterio. So he beats Mysterio. He gets the next card and he has to encounter Sandman. And then after that is finally the Vulture. Once he finally takes care of the Vulture, he gets the instructions to go to the actual factory where Doc Ock is. And they have a much more long, drawn-out fight. And he ends up finally defeating him and breaks open a door, and there's Betty and Aunt May. And, you know, Betty's just very, very happy that they've been rescued, and Aunt May cannot believe what a ghastly outfit Spider-Man has, and he's not very polite. He entered without even knocking, and so on and so forth. So it was kind of humorous. And Aunt May wants to say goodbye to her host, Doc Ock. I'm like, where did he go? We need to say have a proper goodbye. So it was pretty enjoyable. It was about 40-something pages. The whole annual was like over 70 pages. But then it has a lot of like spotlights on his foes and like his costume and stuff like that. Just a lot of little like one-page things.
You bought that digitally?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Was it complete?
Yeah, I was wondering too. But yeah. Like I said, the story itself is like 41 pages, and the other 30 pages are like it's a huge gallery of all his rogues. And then it does like a 3-page story of all of his powers, and actually more than that, it's like a 5-page story. And then, you know, highlights his spider senses, secrets of his costume and his mask, and does a little thing with his classmates, with what his house looks like, and so on and so forth. So it's got like a lot of these little things, but it's the full 72 pages, which is cool.
Cool. I didn't realize it was the first Secret Six, Sinister Six.
Yeah. I didn't know that either, and it was pretty enjoyable. And I'm really enjoying some of these older stories as I've been reading them, because I mean I knew this, but it's fun to read how over the course of like probably a year or 2 years. They slowly, slowly rolled out Mary Jane. I don't know if that was Stan Lee, Steve Ditko, a combination of them or whatever, but like in an early issue, they just mentioned, like Aunt May mentions that she wants him to go on a date with their neighbor, Mrs. Watson's niece.
Oh, yeah.
But they don't even say her name. They just say that. And then it's like,
did he ever hook up with Betty Brant?
Well, at the beginning here, they're saying that they're like seeing each other, but I mean, every single time, like she wants to go somewhere, he doesn't invite her because he has to appear as Spider-Man. He's like, oh my God, I've got to be here as Spider-Man. I can't invite Betty. I hope she's, you know, doesn't get mad. And of course she starts crying and stuff. So you never see them.
Betty Brant shows up to Aunt May. She's in the hospital bed, and Mary Jane's aunt is there, and she says,
"Oh, that's a real early one."
She says, "This is during the Clone Saga."
Oh, okay.
I can't even think of her name now. Aunt May always wanted Pete to be with Betty. That's what she told Betty Brant when she came in.
Well, that was the first that was kind of like the first girlfriend that they pictured in the comics here. But like I said, I mean, it's only been maybe six issues, and you aren't really seeing them go out on a date before you see her. He sees her as well, like leaving a movie theater with Ned Reed. Ned leaves. Yeah. So, you know, that pretty much. But then the last issue that I just read was that he had to go to Europe for a long, like a 6-month reporting assignment. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if they're going to like hook back up together or what. But I'm actually enjoying that just as much as I am enjoying like the action and stuff.
Yeah.
So I think it was really well done. And part of why he became so popular so quickly is that it was like really a relatable thing where mm-hmm. they showed his regular life almost as much as they showed him in costume, if not more so, actually, sometimes.
Yeah.
So, a lot of fun.
Chris, do you want
to
go next?
Yeah, I read that. I was just going to say I actually read that about 4 months ago, the annual, because I periodically, every once in a while, I'll just jump back in to where I left off in reading Marvel Comics in order. And over several years, I've made very slow progress, but every once in a while, I'll... So back about 4 months ago or so, I was reading a bunch again, and I read that, and I think I'm maybe a few... Somewhere, I think on Spider-Man, I'm somewhere in the 20s.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'd read maybe like a decade and a half ago or something like that. I read a bunch of early Amazing Spider-Man and Essentials.
Yeah.
In black and white. I read early Spider-Man and early X-Men stuff, but then a lot of the other early X-Men or early Marvel stuff I had never read. The Avengers and related titles. But kind of like I said on Twitter, I found those flash pages really effective because reading all of that early Marvel stuff, you really don't see a lot of splash pages. So
no, it really stood out.
It stands out a lot more, and it makes, because they do one for each of the villains, it's kind of like the equivalent of these really momentous moments in a movie where the hero takes down the villain.
Yeah, I totally agree.
But yeah, I also noticed that too in reading the early Spider-Man is how the Mary Jane rollout, you know, that it's just something that's mentioned early on.
I love it. Yeah, I love how they do that. And then they finally give her, like they say what her name is then like a couple issues later, but you still... Like, they keep canceling, right? I mean,
a cold, never really,
can't go.
Yeah. And it never really happens.
Yeah, until I haven't gotten to it yet. But that, you know, that issue where she says, you know, face it, Tiger, you hit the jackpot. Which is kind of cool. You know, after this buildup of, like, 20 issues or whatever, hearing about this woman. That's mm-hmm. cool.
So... what should I talk about? Well, I'll link on to that with my choice that is the most related, which is Marvel Team Up issue 81, and it's Spider-Man and Satana, the Devil's Daughter, and this is by Chris Claremont, art by Mike Vosburgh and Steve Lealoa. Story is called Last Rites, and
I actually got to meet him.
Satana?
No, not Satana. I would prefer that. She's pretty hot. She first appeared in a magazine in black and white, I think.
Yeah, it's not like Vampire Tales, it's called or something.
Yeah,
it's called. Yeah.
Just such a modest costume.
I met Leia Lola in a bus, Steve.
Leia Loha?
Yeah.
Loha. In a bus? Is that what you said?
Yeah, we were traveling to Mile High Comics together.
Oh, wow.
Signing, yeah.
Well, he inked this comic book.
Yeah. I just posted a picture of him recently on Twitter, too.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I follow this one...
Is it a picture that he knows about, or?
There's this Twitter feed, this handle that posts old pictures of comic creators, mm-hmm. and I follow it because I find it interesting. Because back in the day, you know, before Wizard Magazine, you had no idea what these people look like. And cons weren't really a big thing. I mean, you'd have hotel cons and stuff, but you never really got to see creators like you do today. So, like, these retro pictures are pretty cool to see. I like them.
Gotcha. Cool. So...
Oh, I have this... that issue, Chris.
Oh, good job.
You said 81, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's weird, because I don't have hardly any. The next one I have is, like, 67. I have 67, 81, and 86.
Yeah, I just have a random pile of these that I picked up to read out of a 50-cent bin.
Yeah.
So it's pretty random, because I was hoping that I started reading this one, and I realized that it kind of continues on from the previous issue, but I didn't get the previous issue. So, but, you know, it fills you in and everything, but it starts off... It involves Doctor Strange, and Satana is at his Sanctum Sanctorum in the beginning with Clea, his lady friend, and the reason that Satana is there is to help Clea deal with the fact that Doctor Strange has turned into a werewolf.
Hmm.
And this, actually, I don't think even really, it might not have happened in the previous issue, but it did happen in earlier issues of Marvel Team Up.
No, it was number 80.
Oh, it was the previous.
Yeah, okay. It was Spider-Man, Doctor Strange, and Clea.
Okay. So, Spider-Man is with Wong. At a place outside a plane that crashed because Doctor Strange went all werewolfy on the plane. But then Satana summons them back to Sanctum Sanctorum, and she explains what's going on, and Spider-Man thinks I'm really out of my league right now. But with all of this mystical stuff, but basically she keeps Wong there and sends Spider-Man on a mission. He's basically the muscle. Satana's going to handle the mystical part of things, where she sends Spider-Man out to a different part of New York by portal to attack and try to subdue werewolf Doctor Strange. So we get a bit of a fight between the two of them. It's, you know, it's a physical one-on-one because of the hand strength that Doctor Strange has from being a werewolf. And he's also, Spider-Man's also trying to protect this woman named Sissy Ironwode, who apparently is kind of a love interest for Peter Parker at this time. And she's in the hospital from a previous attack or something like that. So eventually, Spider-Man is able to cause Strange to pass out and takes him back to the Sanctum, where Satana is floating cross-legged in the air above a pentagram that she has left open so that Spider-Man can carry him into it. And then as soon as he enters the circle, she closes it and locks him in there with them. And Spider-Man at first is a little concerned about this, but she explains that she still needs him to help out, because right now Strange is still subdued, but while the ritual is going on, he's probably going to start fighting back, and she needs Spider-Man to hold on to him and keep him still as much as possible. So it gets pretty mystical and crazy. A lot of demons try to attack as Satana, as she enters into this other realm. And she realizes that as she's doing this, that if she's going to save Strange and possibly humankind, because she's in this other realm, she's realizing that there's this demon horde that's trying to break through. And she thinks that it feels like as if her entire life, since she originally appeared on Earth as a succubus, and it there's an editor's note referencing back to her first appearance in Vampire Tales number 2, that it's all led up to this point, this decision, basically. So she does what she needs to do, and this demon that dwells within her, the basilisk, I think, something like that, is how it's said. She has to kind of release this demon within her, and the demon kills her. So she cures Doctor Strange, but in the process, she dies. Clea is happy to see Doctor Strange, and then there's this tank that rolls into Stark Industries, and Iron Man shows up, and he gets the better of the tank, and then the guys that are driving the tank, he throws them some cherry Hostess fruit pies. And oh wait,
what?
I got confused there. That's the I read right.
That's
into
the ad.
Sorry. Actually, what happens is that Spider-Man's holding Satana's body. Says she came out of her trance and smiled at him, and that she looked really happy before she died. And Doctor Strange explains that he saw what happened on the astral plane, and that the blood spell that he was under can only be broken by more blood, a willing sacrifice. So Satana gave her life for his. Spider-Man asks, well, if she was the devil's daughter, why would she do something like that? And he explains that she was torn between her satanic and human sides, and the satanic side wanted to make her a succubus, but the other side, her human side, wanted her to care for those that she loved. And so she fought and basically died on her own terms. So, but I think she gets better later. I know she made more appearances.
She wasn't completely dead.
At this time, actually, I never really seen something like this where it says at the end, Satana Hellstrom, born 1954, died 1979. But,
yeah, usually they scrape
off. I like the last name, Hellstrom.
Yeah.
I wonder if she's related to Damien.
She is, I believe. I think she's his sister, I think.
Ah. The son of Satan.
Yeah. She's the daughter of Satan, I guess. Mm-hmm. Or the devil's daughter. So. But yeah, I like the era of superhero comics, especially Marvel in the 70s, where they weren't afraid to have devil people, satanic superheroes.
Yeah, I just got a bunch of hardcovers in, and one of them is the Marvel Universe with Chris Claremont, and I was looking to see if it had that book, because he wrote that, but I don't see it on here.
Yeah, it's fun to encounter. You know, I've like everybody else knew him from X-Men, and There's a lot of stuff that he wrote in the 70s for books like this that aren't as well known, and it's always kind of fun to encounter one of those issues. I mean, I didn't know until I opened this. I selected it to read it before I even knew that it was Chris Claremont.
Nice. Yeah, unfortunately, that's not in here. I wonder if he wrote a lot of Marvel team-up, and they did more of his obscure stuff in this collected edition.
Maybe.
Because it has, like, the later stuff, too, like Big Hero 6 in here and Mechanics. I remember finding those in a dollar bin.
I bought Mechanics, the first one or something. I'm like, oh, I don't really care for this. Yeah, I think that's all I bought. I
haven't read it yet. Chris Claremont, I don't know, he's a writer that people love, but because I'm not a big X-Men fan, I don't think I have the same love for him as everybody else.
I tend to like most stuff anything I've read from him from like prior to the 90s, I tend to like.
Me too.
And most
I like his earlier stuff. I will say that.
Yeah.
If I have a preference to read like his later stuff versus his earlier stuff, I'd choose his earlier stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Later stuff after the 90s, I tend not to like.
And I don't know why, but I'm exactly the same way. I mean, it's like all that stuff, and no matter what he was writing, it was Power Man and Iron Fist, it was a Marvel team-up story. The X-Men and so on and so forth. Iron Fist.
Yeah.
I like all of that stuff. But then you get to like the 90s and it's like none of it seems to be nearly as good. I don't know what the reasoning is behind that, but I totally agree with you, Chris.
Yeah, I've never tried to pinpoint why exactly, but I know that that tends to be the case.
Yeah,
and there are exceptions on both sides of the divide, but I tend to, if I'm reading something early, I'll expect to like it, and if I encounter something later on, I'm wary.
Well, he wrote one book. I can't remember what it was. Was it Extreme X-Men?
Yep.
Yeah.
He wrote that, and then there was another one that he wrote. I don't know if they were like time hopping or whatever. But I read that as well. Oh, no, X-Men Forever. I think that's what it was called.
Mm.
That one I kind of liked.
Yeah, that one wasn't bad.
Yeah, that one, the intent of that one is like a what if, isn't it? It's like what if he continued like writing from this story arc. I think that's what X-Men Forever was about.
I know there was one like that.
I think you're right. Yes.
I can't remember if that was that's the name of it, but I know there is one where he picked up as if he hadn't been kind of kicked off of the books due to Jim Lee being popular.
Yeah, yeah.
Basically.
I started reading that and I liked it. I only own the trades. I think I got them like at a convention for like $5 each, and I actually read book one and I was like, hey, you know, that's pretty good. And that was his later stuff. That was like 2009. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I wanted to watch everything.
I wanted to like Extreme X-Men so badly, but I really did not care for it.
I didn't like it at the time, but like I said, I've never been an X-Men fan, so I don't know. Maybe I'd...
Yeah.
What got me back into comics as an adult, I mean, I stopped in the early 90s.
When did you become an adult?
Oh! My wife's home.
That is... Why is your wife sound like she's barking?
Hey!
She's saying,
that's my doggy.
You said your wife was home and all I heard was barking in the background.
Yeah, she's celebrating. She wants me to come greet my wife as well, but I'm busy, Mabel.
How is Mabel doing?
She's doing pretty good. She kind of had a little setback, I think, with the 4th of July. That freaks her out, so she's seemed a little more timid again after that, but you know, she's...
You just have to have the talk with her. You say you gotta toughen up, Buttercup. She's my regular companion. Toughen up, Buttercup. It's gonna happen every year.
Yeah.
I'll be right here to protect you.
Yeah. But we take care of her, make sure she's comfortable. But, yeah, she's crazy. She's pretty crazy.
Firework booms freak me out, too, because we used to have bottle rocket fights. And we'd launch them towards each other, and a lot blew up in my face. So now when a big, you know, like, thing that blows up, like, really loud, I flinch, like, wickedly.
I have flashbacks.
Like it's like a learned behavior, because... I didn't get hit in the face ever, but they blew up right near my face, but my brother did.
Jeez.
This is how crazy it was. My dad used to build us things out of pipe so we could, like, launch it at the neighbors. So we'd have these, like, guns, and it's like, light this, like, vroom, and we could aim them. And they would have their guns, too, and cannons, and they'd launch them at us.
Good old days.
Yeah, it was dangerous, but it was fun until somebody got hurt.
And your brother was the one that got hurt?
Yeah, but he was tough. My brother, I was like, you can't tell anybody. You gotta suck it up. You know, his face is all black and everything. He can't hear because it hit him. And I'm like,
God.
Well, just go wash your face and you just gotta, can't tell mom. She won't let us play anymore. And he toughened up and didn't say nothing.
If you tell mom, I'll hurt you worse.
Mm-hmm. You think that hurt?
Yeah.
Oh, man. You guys don't play around.
Well, since you got the Spider-Man theme, I'll go into mine, which is also Spider-Man, but it's the Clone Saga, which I've never read before. So I have this honkin' omnibus. I am buying some of the issues, by the way, because I am missing quite a few of these just to fill the gaps. But I have this $125 omnibus, and this thing is thick. Like, it really hurts. You have to, like, sit right to do this. Because it's a hard book to read.
Yeah, but, I really don't. I don't like omnibuses very much because of that.
I like them now. I'm starting to learn. I'm learning how to deal with them.
I like them, but it depends. Like, it sucks if that's a book I want to take to work to read on my lunches. That's
you don't want to do this. Well. Like if it. I would love to take this with me on the trip and just finish it. Do you know what I mean? But it's so fucking heavy.
Yeah, so it's annoying. Like, it's so limiting.
It's annoyingly heavy. I have to read it at home. It's too heavy. Matter of fact, this box that just came in was, man, it was like 40 pounds. And I was like, holy crap, what's in this box?
Well, and you know what they should do is you're paying all this money, right, for a nice omnibus. They should include a digital code of the omnibus as well.
That'd be nice.
Uh-huh.
That would be very
So you
nice.
Could take it on the road if you want to and come back and finish reading on paper.
Why not just get it digital in the first place, then?
Oh, you can't
because it's not the same.
Yeah, you can't do that, Chris.
You need an object to take up space.
Let's just say
in your house.
It is the same for a lot of people, but it isn't it isn't for me, and I don't think it is for Rob either.
It's certainly not.
I know it isn't. That's why I got to, like...
I would hate comics more if I read them digitally. I really do. Because
hate them more? So well, you already hate them?
No,
I don't think you could hate them any more than you
well,
do
I
now.
I love comics, but I'm just saying it would change my mood because I associate work with freaking the
screens.
Stupid screen. Yeah.
Yeah.
So psychologically, it messes up my frame of mind.
I just like to mess with you guys and your collector compulsions.
Yeah, that's me. Is that I can't. I mean, I work, you know, at a computer all day as well, but I don't think that that's the reason why I don't like it. I just like collecting things. That's my problem.
Because having it digitally, you're like, so what? I'm like, who cares? It's a bunch of bytes. No big deal.
That's how I am.
I can go buy this. When you have it, a physical copy, it's like it physically exists. And it does suck, like, because you don't have infinite space. And when you come over, Chris, you're going to freak because you're going to say, God dang. And your wife's going to say, God, I thank God you're not like him. She's going to say, thank the gods that it doesn't look like this. But it is what it is.
And you're going to be able to live off that for 6 months after that, Chris. Like, I want to pick this up. I want to get this. Oh, it could be worse. I could be Mike.
I do that. I'll show over pictures of people's collections on the internet and stuff, or people's comic rooms. I'm like, look at this. Look at this crazy person.
Well, I'm sure that those crazy persons had it more organized than what you're about to encounter.
Chris, are you going to visit Mike?
Yeah, next month.
Oh, how nice.
As part of a trip. Mm-hmm. Part of a bigger trip.
Cool.
Yeah, it should be pretty cool.
Like, even my mind, like, my engineering brain is like, these omnibuses are thousands of pages. I mean, thousands! Do you know how long it takes to read 1,000 pages? And yet yesterday I received 3 of them. And I'm like, fuck!
I do. I do agree that the digital, it doesn't satisfy a collector compulsion. Like, I don't think that it's. I know it's definitely not the same in that regard. But if all you want to do is read it, then it definitely satisfies that. You know.
And oh yeah.
It's even more convenient because, like, when you want to go reread it, or somebody's saying, "Hey," you know, makes a reference in a podcast, you could just go pull it up instead of having to go look through boxes and find it.
But
or
yeah,
in my
my
collected editions is in utter chaos because I haven't had time to move the 2 desks. Well, I'll show you when you get here because I probably won't have moved them by the time you get here. But I have a plan to put like 4 or 5 more bookshelves in there and then get everything off the floor, but right now it's like stacks.
Oh right. Yeah,
as tall as people of omnibuses and epic collections.
Yeah.
So yeah. And there's something about collected editions. I don't know. I used to not want them. I used to want the singles, but now I'm finding a lot of love in collected editions. But I read 4 more issues of this. My goal was to read an issue a day out of this book, but that didn't happen. A lot of things happened over the course of the last month that have prevented me from reading hardly any comics. Like, I'm at an all-time low. I'm like in the teens a week instead of like the 30s and 50s that I'm usually in. So I haven't been able to read a lot, but I do want to finish this, and I'm enjoying it. I think I'm enjoying it even more because I haven't experienced it. And these 4 issues were Web of Spider-Man 118, Spider-Man, let's see, what is this one? 52, and then Web of Spider-Man 119, and then Spider-Man 53. So when I was reading this, though, because I wasn't reading monthly, I was like, I picked it up after a month, and I'm like, why the hell isn't Pete in these things? I was a little confused, okay? Because when they left off, they kind of went their own ways, and I thought Pete was staying in New York. And Ben was going back to his place. Well, they explained the Ben stuff, and I was a little just thrown off. Okay, well, Amazing Spider-Man's the next issue, and I think that's where I'm going to get P- Peter Parker. But it's really odd to me because in this arc, I do not like Pete. I don't know how this all turns out, but Pete had that ordeal with his parents and then finding out what was going on with the chameleon, and he became distraught and wasn't acting like himself, and Mary Jane's even acting weird. But Ben seems like he's Pete. I mean, I don't know if that's the intent or what they were going to intend us to do, but it seems like they wanted us to like Ben more than Pete, at least as a reader. And I don't know why that is, but it is. It's that way, because I'm like, man, Pete is a jerk. And like, he's not even going to see Aunt May. She's in the freaking hospital. Well, Ben's there. I'm like, I can't understand that for the life of me. But what this this was a real interesting thing from several standpoints. It spun off of, from what I can tell, off of Venom Lethal Protector. And in that series, they had a whole bunch of Symbionites. And one was a female. And she makes an appearance. I don't even think she's named in this whole series, like what her particular name is. But in the previous arc, Cletus, which is Carnage, got out of that asylum, that highly protected penitentiary asylum, and escaped. Well, Venom still thinks he's a good guy. And Venom is a strange character because you never know if he's a villain or if he's a bad guy or if he's somewhere in between. And here he thinks he's a vigilante that does good. And he's stalking Carnage. He's actually trying to find out where Carnage is. And Clone Spider-Man sees this and is like, I gotta take Venom out. I don't know why Pete's never taken him out. So he goes after him. And the female Venom is after Venom too to try. She's losing control of her body, her human side. And she's trying to get to Eddie to help her control herself. And Eddie's taking it like, well, I need to absorb her and then also absorb Cletus. But Cletus never makes an appearance in these four issues. And Clone Spider-Man actually has these like little white balls that form webbing. It's pretty neat. They're like concussive. As soon as they impact, they explode and they make webbing all over you. And he uses those against Venom, and he actually shoots a couple of them into Venom's mouth, and they take him down, and the guardsmen come up and pick Venom, so he takes out Venom. But there's a lot of other interesting things in this. Kraven's son is looking to stalk Spider-Man at some point. And there's also some villain that, like a gangster guy with red hair that I don't think I've ever seen before, and I even forget his name. And the reporter in this is Ken Ellis, and I don't remember this guy at all.
Mm-mm.
Like, he seems like he's a rival to Ben Urich because he's trying to outdo Ben. And he's doing that with stories on Venom and this new Spider-Man, and he actually names him the Scarlet Spider and puts him in the paper. So, yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff in this. I'm really enjoying it, and it looks like the next few issues I'll actually get Pete, so I'll see where that goes.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I haven't read any of those since they originally came out, and I really didn't like them all that much when they did come out, so I've had no desire to go back to them, but I could see reading them, you know, back to back after all this time. You know, I think I probably would enjoy it more.
Yeah. Well, if I read this monthly, I don't know if I'd like it as much versus reading this all at once.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was initially what they were going for, though, was to make Ben the original, and that they were going to say that Peter was the clone. And they did that by basically just changing the way that he acted. And I don't know, without having read it, it sounds like it was done kind of clumsily.
Well, the whole,
obviously.
The the whole thing is fun, but it is awkward. Like, it's not a smooth. None of this story is smooth. Like, really? Some of these characters just come out of left field, too, and it's like they don't introduce them or anything. It's just, like, thrown at you. But it is, like, a big mini-event. Like, you know what's going on. I can't imagine what it's like to experience it while it's happening because it's not smooth.
Yeah, it felt like a mess at the time.
Yeah.
But, you know, now it's complete, and you can already know where it kind of... I mean, you don't know all the beats of the story, but, you know that Peter Parker is Spider-Man and Ben Reilly is somebody else.
I think this omnibus is putting them out of order, too. Like, it's doing it in terms of arc, but it's not... Like, I'm pretty sure that between these four issues, an Amazing Spider-Man issue came out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm almost positive. And instead of breaking up that arc with Ben... They tell all four stories and out, and then we're going to switch to Pete. But I think when it was coming out, you were just getting a flood of these, you know, here's Spectacular, here's Amazing, here's Spider-Man. I'd imagine that Spectacular and Amazing are going to be Pete, and then these two are going to be Ben.
Yeah, now you're starting to make me remember. I mean, that's exactly, I think, what they did.
Yeah.
Interesting. Very cool.
All right, Chris.
I'll go to my next one.
You're up, yeah.
So I am going to talk about Daredevil number 208. This is an unusual one. It's just a one-and-done story. And it's by Harlan Ellison and Arthur Byron cover. Yes. Yes. And David, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, Mazzucchelli?
Mazzucchelli, yeah.
Okay, it's David Mazzucchelli, thank you. Did the art. And really a fun issue, just an entire action issue. Basically, it starts right away, he's just referencing that he had just stopped an armed robbery. And he sees this little girl calling for help. He starts running after her, and she says she needs help. Her mom needs help. She's in trouble, and leads him to basements or stairs that go down into a cellar. And you know, where's your mother? And all of a sudden, bam! You know, the door closes behind him, and he realizes by getting that close up that it's not an actual girl, but it had a hydraulic system that sounded like a heartbeat and everything else. He actually throws the girl, and the girl explodes off into the distance. Now he's stuck inside this long metal corridor, and every time he runs 10 or so feet, another wall closes off behind him, so he's got no place to go. So basically what happens is early on, he has to avoid a bunch of like darts that come out of the wall, and one just barely nicks him, and has like a coating of some sort of a hallucinogen. So he's kind of sweaty, dizzy, and stuff like that. And throughout the entire issue, he's just going from one crazy trap to the other. Whether it's quicksand, like a pit with spikes in it. Just going from one to the other. It's just a really, really fun story to read. At one point, he's in this very thin, tall room that he just went in, and then, of course, it closes behind him. And there's a camera at the very top. And on each side of the wall, these blades start coming. Basically, what he has to do is hop from blade to blade, and it's actually digging into the soles of his shoe. It's so sharp. He ends up with the ring around the billy club, the little leather attachment. He holds onto the camera just to actually get out of the range of the blades, and he breaks through the wall, and he tries to go through like the inside kind of machinery instead of the actual corridors, because he's got to get out of there. And I mean, he's seeing snakes. He ends up getting out, and there's he sees where he is on this crazy mansion that's just been like patchwork built like all over the place, and his turrets pop up and start shooting lasers at him. So he's got to, as he's avoiding that, he goes back through a skylight. So he's back in, and the floor starts pulling away, and there's a shark with a pool underneath. And I mean, it's just one thing after the other until he finally gets gassed with like a fear gas, and he's just imagining all these things, and he's like, I've got to like center myself. So he starts meditating. He manages to get through that, and he goes into a room, and there's a picture of an old woman on the wall that actually lifts up, and there's a television screen, and it's that old woman in bed, and she's basically saying that she used her entire, she's one of the richest families in the United States, but she's the last one left. And if he's still alive, it means that she's failed. She's trying to get revenge because her son was the Death Stalker, who died about 50 issues prior to this. And although she knows that he was not a, you know, that he was not a,
I think that was a Frank Miller issue.
It was. And that she still blames Daredevil for his death, however, and that, you know, her final act, because she's got no heirs, that was to build this crazy house. And when she died, the house activated. So it basically monitored her heartbeat, and then it sent out a drone in the shape of a little girl to try to only capture him. So as she's giving this speech, she basically says that, you know, now that, you know, you're in here, this, there's still the final trap. So as she's talking, he's like, I got to get out of here, while she's giving this whole speech. So he manages to get up through the fireplace, finds a grate, gets out, goes running out, and jumps over the fence just as the entire mansion blows up. And that's not enough, but he finally feels like it's over, and he's walking away, and the iron gate actually tilts down, and all the spikes from the gate go shooting at him, and he falls down and manages to avoid that as well. He drags himself to Natasha Romanoff's place because they had just been seeing each other at the time, and he's got a court appointment at 8 a.m., and turns out that it's 7:15 in the morning when he finally got to her place, so... he's just absolutely wiped. And then the last scenes are him in court with the judge, like having to repeat his name. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry. It was a terrible night. And the judge doesn't want to hear any excuses. But Murdoch is thinking in his head, like, yeah, last night is done. Ended the deadliest night of my life. And this is today. And I'm safe. And it shows behind him, over his shoulder, two identical drone girls. So hinting at the fact that, well, maybe this isn't over after all. But as far as I know, they never went back to a sequel to this. But it was such a cool, just one and done, just action, just one trap after the other. You see Daredevil just going through all the paces, just trying to get out of this house. And it had that cool like ending, like saying, well, maybe this isn't over after all. So it was really enjoyable. I just felt like I wanted to read an old Daredevil. I went back to the... where I have my run, and I just went through these, and I happened to see this one, so I decided to pick it out at random.
Have you read it before then?
I had read it one time before, whatever, but I didn't remember anything about it.
Yeah.
Super cool.
Very cool. I do like the Daredevil.
Oh, I know you do. You probably have that issue.
I do. But I'm not lacking too many. I mean, there's only a handful.
My oldest issue is Daredevil number 8.
And that's the one I think I'm missing 9.
Yeah. First appearance of the Stilt Man.
Yeah. Yeah, I think by the next year, that's I'll have this complete.
Yeah, yours. How many total issues are you missing?
There's probably about 12, and that includes some annuals. I have annual number one, but I'm missing annual 2, 3, and 5. Number 5 shouldn't be a big deal. That's a modern one. That's an Atlantis Attacks issue. I don't know if Atlantis Attacks is good. I've heard people talk about it, and I know it has an omnibus, but I sat out the Marvel annuals a lot.
If I was collecting that title, I have the annuals, but I don't remember.
That does not surprise me, based on what I know about you.
Well, how could you not get the annual? It's part of the series.
It's part of the series, but it's not. I mean, until recently, like DC 52 and stuff, it was its own thing. Like, you could get like a DC Elseworlds or a DC Armageddon, or it was not part of the series.
Well, I mean, that's...
You did
not
need to know it to have the monthly.
That's possible, but like I was saying with the annual that I covered today, they kept referencing it afterwards. I mean, that's obviously very
that
old.
That is the early one.
Yeah.
Those ones went in the flow of the book.
Yeah.
Towards the 80s and 90s, there were more like mini summer events.
Or just a one, like a
or,
theme,
or just,
like for DC.
There was a period where they were utter crap. I mean,
a lot of them were bad.
The annuals were, it was like, okay, we got these like hodgepodge of stories and we haven't printed them yet, and let's put them in an annual. And now even the annuals, like you'll see some of that stuff going on where you'll see like, yeah, this is part of the story, but then the last two that are in there, they're like these stories that are not very good.
Right.
It's like you want to read it for that first story, but the next two are not that good. But
yeah, no. Like when I was actually collecting, it was just another. I don't know. If I was collecting that series, I had to have that as well.
I used to say on my pull list, don't include the annuals.
And I would get mad when my comic shop would give me the annuals. Would you please give me the annuals? I'm collecting the title.
Yeah.
I just put something in a little chat that is from mycomicshop.com. Mike, that's what it's called. It's you have to look for it says -1, and then it lists that it has number 1 of -1.
Okay.
They've got them there. So it's in alphabetical order. You know how it goes Daredevil and then Daredevil whatever.
Yeah.
You get to the ounce and it says Daredevil -1.
-1. I knew it wasn't under the main title where it's supposed to be.
Where it should be, yeah.
Yeah. So, Chris, are you next?
I think so. Let's see. What should I talk about? Let's talk about The Phantom Stranger. Issue 21. This is from the New 52. Just kidding. This is from...
That's my favorite, though. Believe it or not. It's weird to say that, but I love how they made him Judas. They've toyed with that like in Secret Origins of Phantom Stranger, but the way they rolled with it, oh my god, it got real emotional. Like I love that book.
Well, this is from the only other long running volume. I think though it's the second volume. But from the '70s.
Mm-hmm.
And
what is it? Number 21?
Number 21, yeah.
I actually own 22 and 23, and those are pretty much
those are the
issues.
Only two I don't own.
That's Rob's turn to fill your gaps.
Yeah, exactly.
That's an Aparo cover, isn't it? Or
well,
it sure looks like an Aparo cover. Look at the guy's face in the front. That looks like Aparo right there.
The cover, it is, because the cover is repeated on the title page a couple pages in, how they always had the title pages in the back in the day, because Aparo is the interior artist also.
Mm-hmm. And you can, I can even tell by his face on the cover itself too. You, I can totally picture that face, like a Batman face too. It's just typical Pyro. It looks great. Yeah.
So
if you just showed the Phantom Stranger, I wouldn't necessarily be able to tell though. It's
maybe
face,
not that by
it's
itself.
The faces in the foreground that I can tell.
Mm-hmm.
He's fantastic. I love Aparo.
I like older Aparo. I don't know. There was a point like when he was doing the Outsiders and stuff, and he was still inking himself.
Yeah.
That I think he inked himself longer than he probably should have, and then when he stopped inking himself, his stuff started looking better again, like in like the late, like the Batman stuff in the 90s and stuff. But I think there was like a little stretch where it kind of, he was getting older and like he kind of needed somebody else to ink his pencils. But yeah, but especially back in the day, like he could do it all. Anyway, as you can kind of see from the cover, there's a silhouette in the background of a guy being electrocuted in an electrical chair. And the story starts out with this guy named Johnny Glory. He is the prisoner that's being executed. And then by page 4, he's on a slab in the morgue. And these two guys named Cadaver and Mr. Torque show up at the morgue with papers that are legit to take the body. And so they load it up in their car and they drive to some place called Massacre Mountain. And inside the mountain they carry his coffin in there, and there's this altar and a bunch of torches and mystical symbols and stuff, and there's a bunch of cultists there that and this guy that they refer to as Master, whose name is Cerebus. He's not an aardvark though, he's an older looking gentleman. And they perform the rite of resurrection, and Johnny Glory lives again. As it turns out that this was all expected by Johnny Glory. He knew that they were going to raise him from the dead. And now he has to do what Cerebus asks of him. And then there's these two kids that are playing in their backyard, and their next door neighbor is Roger Staubach, the famous football star, and he's playing with his super Skittle Bowl, and it's like this like ball on a string that you throw at these cans. It's really weird. But then
I think you're having trouble adjusting to the ads there.
When you go visit Mike. Mike's got to give you a little seminar on how to read a comic book, because it seems like you might be a little confused. I think you're reading every page, even if it has nothing to do with the story. Those are called advertisements.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Mike will show you those when you see him.
Okay, well.
Did you find it odd that Roger just showed up in the middle of the story like that?
Well, I mean, DC back in the day, they had like you know, they had what's his name, Bob Hope.
O.J. Simpson.
Bob Hope and
Jerry Lewis.
And
Dobie Gillis.
That, stuff like that. Yeah. So
you didn't find it that peculiar at all?
No, I mean, well, it was kind of weird later on when all of a sudden there was like this huge battle between all these little Green Army men, but
it seemed to have nothing to do with the story up to
that. Yeah, that was a little bizarre, but. But anyway, after Roger Staubach and all that goes on, it goes back to the main story, and then
a lot of interludes, a lot of stuff. They're kind of teasing what's going to happen in future.
I wonder if that's the first appearance of Roger Staubach.
Yeah, it's possible. Well, in comic form, I think he his first appearance and
was at a hospital.
Those were the years that I used to love the Dallas versus Pittsburgh rivalry. Terry Bradshaw, Roger Staubach.
Yeah, I don't think I was alive yet.
Yeah, you probably weren't, but I was.
You were.
I just had a birthday. I'm old as shit.
How old did you turn, by the way?
I'm old.
48?
Yeah.
Or 49?
48.
Okay.
Yeah. So we're both going to, a couple years from now, we're both going to have some milestones. But your milestone's going to be bigger than mine. I'm not sure exactly how to say that, but anyway, so Cerebus, the Cerebus guy, he wants Johnny Glory to kill a man called Chandu Gamal. He just calls it a Mideastern country that this guy is a spiritual leader of, and he's a spiritual leader, and he's kind of like been dispelling a lot of the superstitions that people have in the country, and there is this government that wants to use the people's suspicions against them. They want to use them to control the people, and so they don't want Gamal around to dispel these superstitions. And so Johnny Glory is being sent to kill Chandu Gamal for this government. And the way that they tell him to get to Chandu is through his daughter Indira. So meanwhile, in this country, this Chandu Gamal, he's in a parade, like a motorcade, kind of like Kennedy was at that unfortunate moment, sitting on the back of a convertible. And a guy tries to, not Johnny Glory, but a totally different guy, like approaches with a gun, and the Phantom Stranger shows up. And knocks the guy so that his shot goes wild. And Chandu is really impressed by this. He's really grateful for Phantom Stranger saving his life, and he invites him to join him in his car for the rest of the parade. And it takes some convincing, but eventually the Phantom Stranger agrees. So once that's over, Phantom Stranger says, "You know, thank you. I gotta be going now. I can't stick around one place for too long." And but then he's surprised when Chandu, who has a pretty, pretty calm demeanor, suddenly sees this medallion around one of his guards' necks, and he grabs it off of him. "Hasim, what sacrilegious idiocy is this you wear around your neck?" And it's a symbol of it's an effigy of Sakiva, the false god of death. And Phantom Stranger is kind of surprised by how strongly he reacts, and Chandu explains that he's devoted his life to basically what Johnny had been told earlier, that this Sakiva represents those superstitions that he's working to dispel, and he can't stand to see that. So then we meet Indira, we can see that Chandra kind of has a overprotective attitude towards his daughter that she's kind of rebelling towards, and she has met this Johnny Glory and kind of charmed Indira. He doesn't want her spending time with him, so she sneaks out at night to meet with Johnny, and he gives her a flower that has a fragrance that it emits this gas that causes her to pass out, so that he can ransom her to Chandra. So he abducts her. He gives her to that cadaver and Mr. Torque that are from the beginning of the story. Man, the center page of this just came loose.
Oh no!
That's all right. I think I paid a quarter for it. It's like pretty beat up in the first place.
Maybe if you go, back, they'll give you a refund.
Yeah. I'd still rather have this comic than my quarter, though.
Okay.
And so she's put in this trap. The Phantom Stranger has to go and save her from this like swing blade trap. And meanwhile, Chandra is visited by this demon that says it's been sent from Sakiva, the deaf god that he believes is superstition. And the Phantom Stranger shows up there to fight this demon off. And when eventually it's revealed that it's a disguise that Johnny Glory is using. And when this disguise is removed, Phantom Stranger tells him to look in the mirror. He's like, don't try to trick me. I know what I look like. But when he looks in the mirror, he does actually look in the mirror, and he starts screaming and takes off. And he goes back to Massacre Mountain to confront Cerebus. He says, Johnny, you're back so soon. And I guess Gamal is dead. And he said, no, I'm the one who's dead. And it turns out that his life has been an illusion. We get to see what he actually looks like, and his face is all messed up and destroyed and everything. And so he says, you know, I'd rather have remained dead than to look like this. And he said, you did nothing for me, Cerebus. You bought me back for your deeds, or for your own needs, not mine. You should have left me in hell. And he throws him off this cliff into this fiery pit. And the Phantom Stranger is standing there watching, says, it is ended as it must ever end. When all is considered, the flickering flame of evil burns only itself. So there's also a backup story, a Dr. 13 backup story, which is cool. It's also written by Len Wein, but the art was by Tony DeZuniga. And to put it basically, this mystery is about a woman that seems to be, like, they think that the real Medusa is loose in this town, turning people to stone. And
he's like, this is bullshit. I'm a skeptic. Yeah. None of this stuff exists. I love Dr. 13. He's like, that's his whole job, is to prove none of that stuff is real.
Yeah, because his wife, Maria 13, sees the latest incident of this happen. She sees his shopkeeper turn to stone outside of his shop, and then it jumps to her telling her husband and this other guy about it. And yeah, he says, not doubting what you saw, Maria, I'm only saying there must be a logical explanation. So he's hired by, like, I think the captain of the police to investigate, and his wife stays behind. And so he goes to this dig site where this guy named Stavros Narcos is the foreman, and they're doing diggings, like an archaeological dig. And this old woman shows up to say that what they're doing is sacrilegious, and to kind of make you think that maybe she's responsible, because she's talking about the old gods are angry for them disturbing the rest place, and Stavros tells her to go away. And then Stavros's wife shows up with his lunch, and as she's walking towards him, she trips, and Dr. 13 catches her by the arms before she falls all the way. After that, Dr. 13 just excuses himself, and he goes back to his hotel room, and he calls the captain, and he says, "I'll do me a favor, and I'll have your murderer before dawn." And he's like, "Well, what do you want me to do?" And he tells him to spread the word throughout the city that he knows who Medusa is. It's like, what is that going to accomplish? And he says, just trust me. So he basically sits in his room that night and waits. He tells his wife to stay in a different room. And then he just sits in a chair and waits, and Medusa shows up. He says, "Well, if it isn't Medusa, come on in. I've been waiting for you." She says, "You mock me when a sweep of my hand can turn you to stone." And he says, "You said it, lady. That's exactly what I'm doing, mocking." So when he has that attitude, all of a sudden Stavros shows up as well and tries to attack him physically. Dr. 13 grabs the lamp and smacks him across the head. And the captain shows up, and basically what it turns out is that it was Stavros' wife that was wearing a mask and acting as a Medusa, and she was wearing a mask. And what she had was this small gun that shoots a compressed stream of potassium silicate, which she explains is a chemical that gives the flesh a stone-like quality when absorbed through the pores of the skin. And he figured it out by noticing splotches of it on her hands when he caught her when she fell. So they say, "Well, that explains how, but not why." And he says, "Yeah, that's true. Might not ever know," but he speculates that Stavros and his wife may have felt guilty about what they were doing with the archaeological dig, and so that he was using this method to get the pieces back. But yeah, I don't know. It's a fun little story. Dr. 13, it's always fun little mysteries.
That's cool. I had no idea that there was a volume of Phantom Stranger before this in the 50s.
Yeah, I think it was only a few issues, but I know that John Broome is actually in Carmine Infantino, or his creators.
It was only a few issues, but boy, if you want to get a hold of them, they're expensive.
Oh, they're expensive because they're rare. They're so rare. I actually tried to get the first number one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like none of the you go around the comics room, nobody has it. It's like Chris Campbell likes the Charlie Chan, not necessarily the DC one, but the one before it. And he has trouble finding those just because they're so rare.
It's crazy. I went on Metropolis just to see if they had any. They've got nothing for volume at all.
Yeah.
They got a lot of volume too. Course.
You can poke around and you might find it, but it's going to be expensive.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to buy anything at this point anyhow, but it was just I just wanted to take a look, you know, to see if nobody has anything.
Yeah. Well, I think his first Silver Age appearance is in Showcase, I think. Because I think it reprints some of that Golden Age. So it might be a cheaper way to get it. That's how I got it.
Yeah,
it doesn't do all of it, but I think it does that first issue. These covers
look awesome, though.
Yeah, yeah. They're amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my next book is All-Star Squadron number 4. And this is the one I was missing. And I think in the last episode I covered the Perdegaton issues. With time and how they were having the Japanese Zeros attack stateside. Mm-hmm. Well, during that time, Pearl Harbor happened. And this is like the aftermath of Pearl Harbor. So it's the Justice Society and All-Star Squadron going over to Pearl Harbor and seeing the devastation and all the dead bodies and everywhere, and they're essentially freaking out. And they go on this vengeance thing. They're like, man, they're mad. They're like so mad. They're like, okay, we're going to find these aircraft carriers that the Japanese have, and we're going to destroy them. And they have Spectre with them. I mean, they have their high-powered individuals. Superman, they make it a good point in here to say that Earth 2 Superman is not as invulnerable as Earth 1's counterpart. A little footnote. But Superman, Wonder Woman, they have Batman, the Shining Knight, whole bunch of them, but a handful of them go off to take down the aircraft carriers. And when they get there, they run across this guy, Dragon King. He's on one of the islands. Well, I've always known about the Spear of Destiny. The superheroes couldn't go over to take down Hitler because of the Spear of Destiny. They would, you know, either lose their powers or they would be able to influence them to be used against the United States or the Allies. Well, the Japanese don't have the Spear of Destiny, but they have the Cup of Christ, which also has, I don't know why these religious iconic things have this influence over the superheroes. It's kind of weird, you know, things that have to do with Jesus Christ stop the superheroes from helping. Yeah. But the Japanese have the what do they call it? It's the Cup of Christ, but they call it, there's a term for it.
Get the Holy Grail.
Yeah, thank you. The Holy Grail. It's Indiana Jones. It's in everything. I couldn't think of the term. So they have the Holy Grail. This guy can use the Holy Grail. And what it does is it influences anyone with power or magic. And as soon as they cross this little line of its influence, Superman, Spectre, and a few of them, they notice that they're having anger to the United States. Like, they're just like, man, I want to destroy my fellow compatriots and take them down. And they stay back because they realize that something's going on, that there's this sphere of influence. But Green Lantern and Dr. Fate and a few others go in, and essentially they turn on their friends. And it's pretty much the depowered ones, or the ones that are technology-based. Like, they have Robot Man. This, you know, Robot Man's one of the All-Star Squadrons. Not the Doom Patrol Robot Man, but the other guy. And Liberty Bell. A few of them aren't influenced, but the ones with powers are, and Green Lantern is. I like how Liberty Bell, she just grabs a piece of wood and hits Alan Scott in the head. She's like, bam! Yeah, such a weird weakness, you know? There's a lot of stuff. I mean, you know, Green Lantern had the yellow thing, but wood is everywhere. Just grab a bat. That's what made Sportsmaster like a good Green Lantern villain, because he could just grab the bat and clock him over the head, I guess.
Yeah.
But it was really a fascinating piece just from that to see this Dragon King take down most of the Justice Society. And they have to turn around and essentially leave. And they had a lot of power. And also, I like how there was the Penguin showed up, and he was stealing Hostess fruit pies. And I don't know how the hell that happened. But
man.
The other thing this had is this must have happened around September timeframe when they had the cartoon inserts. There was one cartoon that I never heard of, and man, I would love to check out. It was the Kid Super Power Hour with Shazam. And it looks like an animated Shazam, and I don't know what the hell that was. But it was right before Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, which I would have saw, and Superstars, which was Space Ghost and the Herculoids. But that's weird. I've never heard of this animated Shazam cartoon.
I remember it existed, but I don't think I ever saw it.
I knew the one with the Shazam Isis Hour, which was live, you know, characters.
Maybe that's the one. Oh, no. I was thinking of it was animated. The one that I'm
yeah, this one was animated.
Okay.
So, yeah, there's some interesting things. The other thing that was interesting I didn't realize is Dr. Fate had lost his helmet during this time. And I don't know where his power is based on right now, but he seems like he's really depowered. Like the influence of the Holy Grail wasn't as much of a big deal on him because he had lost lots of his magical abilities. But this was a good comic. Like it makes me want to read the whole thing from not just the issues I've missed, but the whole thing. Oh, the other one that was influenced is Johnny Thunder with his he was doing the say you thing and guiding the Thunderbolt to do bad things. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to now that I have the full run too, eventually one of these days I'll just grab them. I'm going to read all 67 issues.
And the letters page was talking about that, what Chris was talking about, the Justice League book that had their 16-page insert with the All-Star Squadron.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it was really good. There's a lot of history in there, that, like historical references. And
yeah. Roy Thomas loved doing all that stuff.
Yeah.
So I got a lot of that even in the Infinity Inc. when I read those. You know, he loves throwing that stuff in.
Yeah.
That's cool. Well, I've got one more that I'll cover just quickly because, honestly, I grabbed it because it was an old one that I read as a kid that I remembered fondly from the cover. But really doesn't – standing alone, it isn't. It doesn't impact much, and it doesn't make a whole lot of sense if you haven't read the previous issues. But I guess as a kid, I really loved it. And that's Justice League of America number 170. It has a great cover of all the heroes with Batman in the middle in a spacesuit, you know, like a thing that he's flying. It has all the other heroes, like, kind of all around him flying, you know, kind of like in a whole like circle around him. It's kind of cool. But first I'll tell you that Jerry Conway wrote it, and Dick Dillon and Frank McLaughlin were the artists. It starts out with, now Batman's in the satellite, and what he's explaining is that the atmosphere in Earth is becoming oxygen rich for some reason. And he needs to somehow try to find a solution. And he's saying, well, and I don't even have superpowers, but this is going to be my deal, my job. I can't get a hold of anyone down on Earth, so I'm going to have to figure this out. And basically, the Earth's oceans are getting lower, and the oxygen in the air is increasing. And so he's got to find some sort of solution to this. After just a couple pages, it immediately goes to United Nations in New York. They're having a court case against five of the Justice Leaguers, and that's Superman, Wonder Woman, Red Tornado, Flash, and Green Lantern. And apparently, and this is all, as I said, this is all in previous issues, so kind of trying to catch up. But basically, I don't know, Mike or even Chris, if you remember a superhero or actually was fighting the Justice League at one point called Ultra with two A's at the end of his name. He had like a purple costume. And basically, I guess they had the charge was they had captured him and held him without in a stasis cube without trial. As the trial starts, Ultra starts attacking his lawyer. And it turns out that, and the Justice League try to protect the lawyer, but it turns out the lawyer is some sort of weird energy being that once Ultra gets a hold of, starts falling apart, and it's just like weird, like blobs, like glowing blobs up in the air of the courtroom. And they said, you know, it's too late. We're still, we've done what we needed to do. We're you know, destroying your Earth and so on and so forth. So the heroes kind of decide that they have to figure out what's going on. Also, Superman had previously already left because they had discovered there was an issue. And he was, and Green Lantern was creating a holographic, basically a hologram of Superman, making the court think that Superman was there, but it really wasn't. And when he attacks Ultra, he gets knocked out, and so the hologram of Superman disappears. Flash tries to attack these weird glowing, like, amorphous creatures and gets zapped and goes into shock. So they have to split up. Ultra and Red Tornado go to try to figure out what's going on. Wonder Woman goes to try to rescue Superman, who apparently these creatures have left at the bottom of a lake or an ocean or something. And Green Lantern is going to take Flash to the hospital before he gets much worse. So they all go their own ways, and it cuts back to Batman putting on a spacesuit back up at the satellite, and he recounts that all the other Justice League members who weren't at this trial are fighting all of these issues, all these fires that are breaking up because of the enriched oxygen in the atmosphere. So it shows like Elongated Man and Supergirl and Black Canary and Green Arrow and Aquaman all doing different things, but said they're fighting the symptoms, but they're not actually fighting what the problem is.
They're dealing with global warming.
They're dealing with the global warming,
which doesn't exist.
No, but they're Trump. but they're helping the symptoms and not helping the disease. The disease being Donald Trump. So they go. So they all go their separate ways. They're trying to figure things out, and Wonder Woman saves Superman from the bottom of this particular lake, and he's passed out, but she revives him. And basically, what Batman has discovered is this rogue asteroid that had gone into our orbit. It seemed ordinary, but when he did another scan of it, he found out that it's actually a disguised spacecraft. And it's actually what's causing the problems in Earth is what it's doing. If you see that the Earth's oceans are getting lower and oxygen in the atmosphere is getting higher, then what you can guess what's happening is it's draining the water from the oceans, but only taking the hydrogen and resulting in extra oxygen, right? So he's gone onto this vessel that's doing this, and he's figuring out how to activate the propulsion unit for the spaceship. So all the rest of the JLA members get together, and they find the hideout of these creatures, kind of their base. And with Green Lantern's ring, he's scanning, and he's sweeping it back and forth, and boom, there's a huge explosion because there's all the estrogen hydrogen molecules in this actual base that they were collecting, and so it blows up. They find Ultra, who had found that on his own, away from, because Red Tornado had to stop and save some people earlier. And then suddenly up in the sky, there's this huge explosion. And what they find out is that it was that rogue asteroid, that spaceship, and suddenly the Justice League communicator is going off on Red Tornado, and he said, it's Batman. He ended up hurtling this spaceship out of the solar system, and it blew up. However, his jet cycle was damaged, and so now he needs a lift home. So that was basically it in Wonder Woman, and it just shows how smart Batman is, despite not having any superpowers. Wonder Woman says, all the while we're working down here, he was centering on the core of the problem, That man is simply astonishing. And Red Tornado says, what would we do without the Batman? Green Arrow says, you know, Tornado, that's a question I hope we never have to answer. And then Wonder Woman goes and rescues him with her invisible jet. So all in all, I mean, it's enjoyable, but it's something that I would have had to have really, to get anything out of it, would have had almost had to read the few issues before that. It kind of set up this trial and so forth. But it was still nice to revisit. It's from 1979. So, like, I read this like crazy when I was a kid, but I haven't read it in
over 30 years. It is a fantastic cover.
I love the cover.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's what I've always remembered. I never remembered what the body of the story was, but, you know, I never forget that cover. So I'm like, well, let me pull it out and I'll reread it. But it's something that would benefit from reading the issues prior, I think. But I still enjoyed going back to it.
Cool.
Yeah. Chris, I'm really old. That's from 1979.
Yeah.
What were you doing in 1979?
I was being born.
You were being born right in 1979?
Right in that year.
Wow. Good for you.
It didn't take the whole time.
Thank God for your mom.
Yeah.
Horrible.
It did take a while, though. I took a while to be born.
Yeah, but not the entire year.
No, just overnight.
Oh, okay.
She went in the hospital one day, and I was born the next day.
Ah.
At like 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. Middle of the night, really, huh?
A big baby too.
Were you?
Yep. So, the last thing that I read was another issue of Jonah Hex. This is the next one that I had sequentially from the one that I read a few episodes ago, which was 50-something. This is 61, so I'm jumping ahead a few issues here. And so
this is the first volume then, right?
I think it's volume number one. It's from 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
This was published in 1982, this issue.
This is when you got off the newsstand back in 82.
Yes. I had to have somebody lift me up from the ground because I was still a toddler.
Yeah, but after that, it was
I couldn't reach it, but yes. So this has my crayon scribbles all over it. No, it doesn't. I wasn't allowed to read Jonah Hex until I was 4.
Oh, I see.
That's so, this is, we got some more Tony DeZuniga in here. This is illustrated by Dick Ayers and Tony DeZuniga. And
he did a lot of Western stuff.
Yeah.
They probably said, this guy is one of the only artists we have that could draw horses, so.
Yeah, maybe.
Let's get him on there. I hear from artists that that's one of the hardest things to draw.
I see people complaining, like artists complaining, like, oh my god, I got to draw a horse.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the horse is in this. There's a horse in the very first panel, actually.
How's it look?
Looks pretty good. I mean, it's only part of a horse. The panel, you know, cuts off, so you don't see the whole horse, but what you can see of it is pretty good. It doesn't have any feet. It's a Rob Liefeld horse. So this story is called.
I love the fact that he joked about that though.
I think I saw that post.
Yeah, four pictures of his family, and there were no feet. There were no
all the feet
there.
Were cut off.
And he goes, "Look, there's no feet."
Dude, that was awesome. I have to say, I mean, historically speaking, he doesn't strike me as a humble person or having a good sense of humor about his own shortcomings. That was great.
That was fantastic.
Really, yeah.
You know he created Deadpool.
Of course.
Who?
And Domino was going to be in that movie. He created Cable. Yeah.
Never heard of him.
And let's not forget Glory and Prophet.
Oh, anyway. Yes.
back to a different comic. Else, but anyways, In the Lair of the Manchus is the name of this title, and it actually starts out really suddenly where Jonah Hex is held captive by Chinese men, and they bring out his wife, Mei Ling, who he hasn't seen in a long time, and to show that they have her captive as well, too. And then there's a kind of a couple pages of recap, which was nice because I really didn't know what was going on. Apparently, this all happened in the previous issues where this guy, he went to America and on behalf of the warlord of this warlord in China to find someone who had skills like Jonah Hex had, and he introduced himself to Jonah at a cafe and then drugged him and abducted him and his wife, Mei Ling. They had to drug them several times in the process, but eventually they brought them to China. And this actually is kind of similar to the Phantom Stranger story in a weird way, in that he's different circumstances, but they want him to assassinate the Emperor of China. And basically they have Mei Ling there as leverage. And the guy goes on to explain that the Manchu dynasty in China has become corrupt, and that the warlord that this guy works for believes that they're a part of the White Lotus, a secret society that has played a part in China history for years and years, and they believe that they can, if they take over, they can do better. But then they have a bunch of men attack Jonah Hex, and he's thinking to himself, like, if they want me, they abduct me and bring me halfway across the world to do this job, and then they have all these people attack and try to kill me. But basically, it's the old thing where the warlord wants to see Jonah be tested, you know, when he has nothing but his bare hands to defend himself. And of course he does. He takes down all the men that attack him, and the warlord approves. And some time passes where Jonah is allowed to see his wife, and we learn that they're estranged, but that Lei Ming may still have feelings for him, for the fact that the way that she was abducted is that she received a telegram that he was in trouble and she answered it, but it's not really the time or place to talk about it. So they reveal the plan that they have actually involves his wife, that they're going to have her smuggled into the palace, and she's going to put herself in the emperor's harem, basically. And then when the time comes, she's going to be the one that's going to let, she's going to open this secret passage so that Jonah can get into the palace. And so while he's waiting, they have Jonah study the plans of the palace so that he knows the layout and everything. And so this other guy that works for this organization, for the secret society, we see him take Lei Ming to the palace and directs her into the place that she can go, and then from there go mingle with the harem. He says, you know, women come and go, so as long as you act like you belong, no one will think otherwise. But then she says, well, what are you going to do? I'm just going to slip back away before anyone notices me. But then when he turns around, he's knocked out and taken prisoner by some of the emperor's men. So then Jonah goes for his part of it and makes his way to the palace. He fights his way in, lassos his way, climbs up outside wall and takes out a couple of the guards. And there's a couple. There's a dog that of the Emperor that barks to alert that Jonah Hex is there. That was my dog providing sound effects for me. No, there's no dog in the story, unfortunately, but there are two pages that Mike would not have liked because it's all in Chinese. All the word balloons are in Mandarin, I guess. So you can't, unless you know how to read that, you can't understand it. So that would have probably made you mad, Mike. But, so...
Wait, what would have made me mad? Barb just came back.
there was a couple of pages where there was only Chinese writing, so you couldn't understand what any of the word balloons were.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Back then?
Yeah, but it's basically what's going on is that the guy that was captured is dragged before the Emperor, and you can see that he begs for his life and that he's... ordered to be executed. So from
kinda
the action,
like, it's kind of like Deadwood. Did you ever watch Deadwood on HBO?
No. I always wanted to, but I've never gotten around to it.
And there was a Chinese man there that used to communicate with Swearengen, but he didn't speak a word of English at all, and the only word that they would say that they understood together was cocksucker. That's the only word. Like, he would say that if somebody was a bad person, you know, he'd say, Ecker, cocksucker. But then he would go off and then they wouldn't say what he said. Like, you wouldn't know. But Swearengen, he would always know what he said just by his gestures. Do you know what I mean? He didn't really understand Chinese. He just, he would, they had like this unwritten. Language with he would know what he's kind of saying, and he would just say a few words, and then that guy would shake his hand, you know, head, like he knew what he was talking about.
Gotcha.
It's good. You should watch it, especially if you like westerns. You'll love Deadwood.
Yeah, I've always meant to. So So Jonah gets to the point where he meets up with May, and Jonah's plan is basically just to rescue her and then just get the heck out of there. He's not like going to go through with killing the Emperor or anything like that. He just, you know, wants to get the hell out of there. But as he turns back to try to go the way that he came, there's a whole contingent of soldiers and stuff, so he can't go that way. And then when they turn back inward, there's a bunch of men that start to attack as well. And basically it's that sequence where the other man was abducted. They basically got the information out of him about the attempt. And so they've been skunked, as Jonah Hex puts it. And he tells May to just take off and save herself, but she sticks with him. Eventually he convinces her, though, to go and get help. So it's just a kind of a gun battle that's going on as she leaves. And tries to find a different exit. She finds a secret passageway that she goes out, but she can't figure out how to get help or to go back for Jonah. And eventually Jonah takes off, and he's using his knowledge of the palace that he's studied, thinking that he's going to go around this corner and it should open up into a big area, but he finds a dead end instead. And ends on a cliffhanger with him was back against the wall, and a whole bunch of Chinese soldiers with bayonet rifles trained on him. So I don't have the next issue, so he's just going to be stuck there forever, unless I get it.
Was Roger Staubach in this one?
No, you know, there wasn't any interludes in, I mean, there were ads, which I can, but there weren't any comic styled ones. There was a weird spot where there's all these different signs. One of them says, and I've seen these signs in other comics, you know, like self-defense and stuff like that, but there was a weird one that looked like it was handwritten, and it says posters, $1, Conan, Hulk, Skull, S-K-U-L, no COD, send 50 cents for post, and then it has an address.
Skull.
So, yeah, I thought that was kind of weird because it's handwritten.
Yeah, that is weird. So. That's when ads meant something, though. Like, today's ads, there's three ads. They're usually self ads, and you might get a car.
Yeah, house ads.
Yeah, you might get a car or something like that, but it's they don't really give you a sense of the time like they did back then. Like,
right.
You get a sense of history with the ads back then.
We were talking about that the one other time, about the ads in general. Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because I was saying how there's really no ads. And then you said, well, every once in a while they do some sort of promo. And in the this month's DC ones, they have that two-page, I think it's a Snickers.
Flash. Yeah, the Flash one.
Yeah.
They're more distracting now than they were back then, though. Because sometimes it actually, like, you'll be reading Justice League and there's Flash running around and you're like, damn.
It's funny that you say that, because that's exactly what happened to me the whole time. Like, wait a minute, this is the commercial. This is the ad.
Yeah, and there was no Twinkies in the right-hand corner, so you can't. And there's no Hostess cupcakes or something.
Exactly.
Well, I'm going to talk about collecting on my last book and just give a quick summary. I'm not going to take very long.
Sure.
But there's this, I hate this shenanigan that publishers did with the flip books. And here's why I hate it. I hate it because if you archive it, it looks like you're missing an issue, especially if you just buy one copy. So you file it under whatever issue it is, like Shadow of the Bat, and then you think you're missing an issue of Azrael. And it's really a pain for the collector. Not only that, if you have a database, it looks like you're missing one, and you go to get it. It's almost like if you're a collector and you want a complete run, you have to buy two. At least that's the way I feel. So you can archive one with Azrael and archive one with Shadow of the Bat. So now I have two. Yep. And
I think that's crazy.
When I was completing my Ultraverse run, that happened with a couple books because they had a bunch of flip books, and I ended up buying two there, which I think you have to, though, because you're going through, if you do it digitally, I don't think you have to worry about it. Well, how would it work digitally? Would you just buy Shadow of the Bat, or would you just buy Azrael? They have to have these books there. I wonder if anybody's looked.
I don't
like,
know.
Do you get both books for the price of one? That would be very interesting to see.
Well, because usually, yeah, I mean,
these have to be out there because they're in the prelude to No Man's Land.
So what's one of the issues? Shadow of the Bat, which number?
Shadow of the Bat, number 80.
I'll look it up while you're talking about it.
Yeah. I'd be really curious if you pay for one book or if you pay for two books digitally. Mm-hmm. It would be really interesting. Because it is two full books, and the cover price to this thing is $3.95, which was, you know, pretty much $2 for each issue. And this issue is the first appearance of Nicholas Scratch, and he was the villain that shows up in this. That's kind of weird in the No Man's Land that a lot of people complain about, but he is interesting. He's kind of like Azrael's objective in No Man's Land to take down Nicholas Scratch. But before No Man's Land, Cataclysm happened. And Batman in Azrael says, I really need you to go to Washington and protect this senator, his Senator Halivan. And he assigns Azrael to go do it. Azrael reluctantly goes out there and does it. And he fails. Nicholas Scratch does kill the senator. And Nicholas Scratch's origin's weird. Do you guys remember this guy? He's like a rock star type looking guy. And he has like people that follow him. He's real influential. But he was a geek. And he was like an astronomer. And he got infected with some kind of radiation. And that radiation caused him to become this influential person and now popular. And so that's what the issue is Azrael actually, if you read the Azrael series, you'll note that he fails a bit on his missions. And this one, it's not for lack of trying. He just got there just a little bit late. And the senator was killed. And in the flip book, Batman Shadow of the Bat number 80, this is by Alan Grant and Buckingham. This was fantastic. This was called The Waxman and the Clown. And imagine if you have a cataclysm and you're the guy that has to maintain Arkham. So Arkham Asylum is losing its funding. They need the senator over there that's going to fight for them. The senator gets killed. They have limited pills to give to their inmates. They have limited food. And all hell's just about to break loose. And Arkham is losing 10 to 12 employees per day. So he's totally losing control. And I got distracted there because Harley's out there looking at the neighbor. But this is the whole issue. And there's this guy called Waxman. I don't remember him. And he has this big bully guy called Pinhead. He's got a really small head. And he's becoming brave in this situation. Like, he's messing with the Joker, doing things. The Joker's featured in here. And one thing the Joker does to cause chaos in this is he gets into the room with the computer. And he changes all the drugs for what people are getting. So he does the opposite of whatever they're getting. So, like, what's an example? Like, Killer Croc is on these things to calm him down, and he's getting 12 dosages. He puts him on amphetamines to give him 3 times daily, and he just inverts all of them. And one of them is like give him antidepressant drugs, and he gives him sedatives. So he's like inverting all the drugs. So, it makes you really, really want to read the next issue, because you think of the worst possible case scenario. You know, you lose all your employees, and in a world of an insane asylum, it's the inmates are going to take over.
Yeah,
and it read really, really, really well. Like, I love that one. And the other book, it was Dennis O'Neill and Robinson.
It looks like they just, on Comixology, they just split it into two.
Into two issues. But what is like, the cost? Like $1.99 per, or what?
Yeah, because it still shows the same cover that says special 2-in-1 flip book, but for Shadow of the Bat number 80, it's $1.99, and it says the page count is 24 pages. So
that's interesting.
Yeah, they just make it into two comics. Makes sense, I guess.
So you have to buy it twice?
Rob, would you do that? Would you buy it twice?
Oh, I did buy it twice.
No, but would you buy it twice? Did you purposely buy it twice, or did you?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
So one for each title.
You did it live. See, back then I was like smart and says, you're not going to make me fall for this shenanigans. And then I fell for it later anyway.
Yeah, like the, what was it? Was it Eternal Warrior and Archer and Armstrong, didn't they have one like that too?
Yep, they sure did. Yep.
Yeah, I remember
Malibu,
that.
Valiant, DC. I think even Marvel had did a couple of them like that. Oh, they did. Except they were. It was in this Clone Saga.
Oh yeah.
They had a flip book on it, but it was, you had to buy all the books essentially when you're buying Clone Saga.
Yes.
Because like part one was in one book, and then part two was in another book, and they were flip books on themselves. So if you wanted to continue on either story, you had to buy the next Spider-Man book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I did.
So basically, you're spending twice the amount of money because it bothers you that there'll be file, that one of them would have a hole in the filing.
Well,
sequencing.
Well, I would end up. I mean, sometime down the road, I would have gone through, right? Be like, oh my god, why am I missing this issue?
And I would have done the exact same thing anyway, just like me.
Uh-huh. Yep.
He would have just said, fill it in.
Yeah, and I'd go to my Sprite before I had a database. I had a whole like, actually, it was just a Word document. And I would look. I'm like, it says that I have this issue. But I'm looking. I don't have this issue. What happened to the issue? It would drive me crazy. I would end up buying it and be like, oh, I already had this.
See, in the database, what you should do is
it does say it does say flip note. If you read the note. It's already in the database.
Yeah, and go in there and like look like why don't I have, you know, Shadow of the Bat 80? And then you go and look shit. You look up in your database and say flipbook with Azrael, and then you look, oh yeah, I have Azrael, and that's where it's at. Or
honestly, I'm trying to make some sort of logical excuse, Chris.
No,
the point is, if I actually went through those numbers and I saw that there's a missing number, that would bother me enough that I would need to put a number in there.
Yeah.
You're talking about a guy who reads alphabetically. Come on.
Yeah. Well, I guess there's worse psychological issues to have, right? You know? It's better that than, like, killing people or something.
Yeah. I'm with Rob, though.
Who says you can't do both?
I'd rather have all the people with they belong together in their home.
Yeah.
They need to be in the same box. These
are guys.
Right, they do. They have to be together.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can understand the appeal of it, but I would just be like, I'm not spending another $4 just to satisfy that itch, I guess.
I actually remember being angry, like, when it would come out that way. You're like, but then on the other hand, you know, I don't know how much it was at the time. But on the other hand, it's no different than if I would have bought, well, no, it is different.
$2.99 issues, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but I mean,
you
I don't know.
You save like
but
2 cents, Chris, so they're saving us money. So like if you go with your theory, it's a good thing. Like if you don't have that collector mentality and you want to read the story.
Then you saved some money.
Then you saved some money.
But I just spent more money.
Yeah.
Well, even if you have a collector mentality, you could have a collector mentality to the extent that you want to own the issues, because if you buy one, you own both issues.
Absolutely.
But if your collector mentality goes to the extent that you like,
you should understand this. You have some library skills.
Oh, I understand that. I'm just saying like Rob said, it made him angry, but he still went ahead and bought 2 copies. It would have made me angry, too, but I would have been like, screw them, I'm not giving them more money.
Just and that's exactly what I did until 30 years later.
You know I what said, I could do
screw
nowadays?
You guys, I'm going to buy you later.
I mean, maybe
nowadays,
10 years from now, I'll feel differently.
I could buy the issue, right, and go online, find the cover of the other issue, print it out and stick it in there, and that probably would suffice for me.
Yeah, knowing to say like,
so there wasn't a blank in there.
Write
so
yourself a note, or just put it like a sticky in there, and like write a piece of paper and write, Rob, you own this issue. It's on the other side of Shadow of the Bat number.
You write on the. You actually file a backing board in a bag that says that.
Exactly.
Go to Batman Shadow of the Bat.
It's there.
Yeah.
There's nothing to worry about.
Hey, it's your money. You know, you can spend it whatever makes you happy, right?
Yeah.
So I just like to tease
when
you guys.
When is enough enough?
It's, you know, yeah. I mean, but Chris, the thing is, you're not wrong, because it was making me angry that they were doing the flip books. It wasn't making me happy at all.
Yeah.
Like, I only read it once. I read each side of the book. I had two copies.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
And then when you bag and board it, which one do you bag and board it with? What if there's two? What if there's two awesome covers?
That's another reason why I needed to have two.
Then you can just like, you know, like alternate it once in a while. Like once.
Well, every year.
Every 6 months.
Alternate,
every year or something. It's like, okay, it's January 1st. It's time to move my Shadow of the Bat 80 over to Azrael.
Oh my lord, that would be awesome.
Rob, we got a party to go to. Hold on, I got to move my Shadow of the Bat number 80 over to...
Exactly. Yeah.
That Shadow of the Bat is way better. That's the one you should keep.
Yeah, you just make a choice like that. Like, okay, which story is that like better?
Story.
Or which cover is cooler looking? Or
I was getting tense, like, reading it. I was like, you know, they're showing Zaz, and he's like... trying to convince Arkham, let me out so I can kill all these guys before they kill you. He's like, I will kill every one of these inmates and then you won't have to worry about it. Let me out.
Oh my lord.
it's just insane, man.
Yeah.
It's like, it almost turns into a horror book, because I've always been creeped out by the crazy houses and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it turns into the craziness. But anyway, don't like flip books for collecting. And I guess digitally it's fair. It's a good deal. Because you got for $1.99, you could just buy whichever one you want.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good, right?
Yep.
Yeah. I guess that's the way to go. All right, well, this has been an episode of Geek Brunch Retrocast, and you can reach us at geekbrunchpodcast.com, at Rob Krieger at the Twitter, at MythMakingETC on the Twitter is Chris, and I'm at Mike Myers Brunch on the Twitter. And what else? We have a Facebook page, Geek Brunch Podcast. You can click the like button and then follow the episodes there. And anything else you guys want to promote?
Well, you were mentioning it before, but people need to put some reviews in.
Yeah, I did mention that.
Yeah, yeah, and one of your, I think your weekly reads or something, you were talking about it. There hasn't been any
Bill bitched about it in Geek Brunch, too.
Well, maybe that's what it was. I knew I'd heard you guys recently say something about it.
Go vote for Kingdom Come.
That's right. Gotham by Geeks.
No, I'm gonna edit this out. That didn't
make sure you do
in.
Kingdom Come.
La 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 la.
It's a modern day.
Vote for Team Mike. Team Mike, and vote for Identity Crisis.
Oh,
Team Daryl.
Team Daryl.
Daryl knows a masterpiece when he reads one.
No. I want this episode to be named Team Daryl.
No. I'm glad I'm editing it. So I'm going to cut that out.
Oh,
I'm recording too.
I'm
going
to
release an alternate version of this episode.
I think I'm going to lose. I think I got the Nerdy Legion fellas to help me, but I think when all said and done, I'll lose.
Why?
Because I just think that people prefer Kingdom Come to Identity Crisis in general.
I found as time
is gonna go on, it's you know, like within the month or week that he's gathering votes.
Yeah.
I think things are gonna change dramatically as, like, I got all my votes because I started asking for them.
Well, I enjoyed Identity Crisis, but I just felt like it was. I felt like it was too dark for me at the time.
It just hits at home on so many levels. I love that book.
I mean, that's good.
I know how Chris feels about it. He doesn't like it.
You don't like it, Chris?
No, maybe one of these days I should reread it just to make sure I still feel as strongly about it. But, like, at the time, I hated it.
Yeah, I never hated it. It just, you know, I mean, as things got dark in the 80s, I felt like this was, at this point, it just took it too far.
Mm-hmm.
That's just me.
And I don't like, not, it's not only that, but the thing that really makes it a problem for me is that it rewrites past history. Like, it goes back in and changes things about the old stories and says, no, this is what really was happening.
But have you read those old stories, those old Justice League stories? Meltzer tapped into that Justice League story arc. I mean, he took a concept that was already explored and he blew it up with the mind wipe stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was already there in continuity. He just expanded on it. He didn't wash it clear or retrofit it. It was already there.
Yeah, like I said,
he took the other stuff with the Atom out of the Atom comic from the Silver Age. Like, I could point you to every comic book that stuff came from.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, when I read it, I didn't know DC history very well, and I don't know. I remember hating it, but, like, it's been a long time since I read it, so every time it comes up lately.
Well, that's why you should have voted for it, so you can reread it with us. Come on. Instead of rereading something that you've already read just recently, probably.
Definitely more recently. Oh, wow.
All right, I'm almost guaranteed I'll come in second. I don't think Chris's will stand a chance. And Justice may get more votes, but
it seems right now, like, with the, because you can look at where the, you know, what the current standing is, and it really just seems like it's between Kingdom Come and Identity Crisis.
Yeah.
The other ones aren't even close.
Yeah. No, not at all.
Any of them, I'll be glad to reread, though. Like, I don't care, but I'm ready to reread it. Identity Crisis, so I could sit there and cry.
Cry.
All right, well, you guys have a good one. And Chris, think about what you want to do when you're here.
Oh, yeah, we will.
Do you want to go to Garden of the Gods? Do you want to go up Pike's Peak? What do you want to do? If you plan it, it'll be better for you.
He wants to know where the best place to get the Rocky Mountain oysters are.
Oh, yeah.
Chris, you don't normally eat meat.
Testicles.
But you'll make an exception for this trip.
No. Well, let me ask you this. Have you had any of them? Have you had
me?
A Rocky Mountain oyster? Yeah.
Never.
You do not want to eat it. It's texture. If you're a person that doesn't like certain textures in your mouth, you do not want to have a Rocky Mountain oyster. I had one.
The reason I ate one
because my wife was brave enough to eat one, and I was like, if Barb can eat one, I can eat one.
Yeah. Delicious, huh?
No, I don't like it at all.
All right. Well, I hope you guys have a great rest of your weekend.
All right. You too. Take care.
You too.
Bye.
Thanks.
Adios.
Bye.